First, a word from our super specialty sponsor. This series would have been impossible without the support of our super specialty sponsor, Savor Brands. Before I play this clip from founder and CEO Patrick Lau, I want to take a quick moment to say thank you to Patrick, Mark, and the whole team for believing in the work we do at the Coffee Podcast and for being so easy to work with. Thank you. We're at SEA Expo right now. Y'all are announcing some big stuff. For people who aren't familiar with Savor Brands, what do you do? And what do you have to offer roasters and other coffee companies that are looking for things like what you do?
Sure. Other than phenomenal people to work with, okay. what we do offer is the best quality packaging. We look at ourselves as high-end packaging for coffee, for roasters, for cafes. And at Expo, we're excited to launch and release our Compost Plus line of 100% industrial compostable packaging. Also have our Savor Live, which is our mobile app technology that helps roasters and cafes process payments with the retail customers, mobile ordering for pickup. And at the same time, we also have our Pono Collective that we wanted to talk about. And what that is it's our nonprofit to educate culinary students about the origins of coffee and the entire coffee supply chain.
Oh, cool.
So that we've done multiple Pono Collectives, and one of them is actually, we actually had two classes be a credit course at a culinary institute
cool.
in yeah. the Pacific in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Been around the coffee scene for any time at all, you have probably heard the phrase bean to cup, or maybe seed to cup. It is the coffee culture's way of saying the more colloquial farm to table. Or it can be a way to reference the story that captures all the hands that go into making a delicious cup of coffee possible. This series is both. We are about to step into the story of specialty coffee through members of coffee roaster Metrics supply chain. This is the story of specialty coffee, the producer. You're listening to the Coffee Podcast. I'm Jesse Hartman. Where does coffee come from? Where does the story of coffee begin? It begins with the coffee farmer, or as we often say, the coffee producer. The person or persons whose hands do the mighty work of planting, maintaining, and harvesting coffee for us to enjoy. I met with Benjamin Paz, an award-winning Honduran coffee producer, to talk about what role a producer plays in the story of specialty coffee.
So my first question for you is, can you help us gain some context? Do you have four personal farms or more than that? Four?
Well, first of all, thank you for the space and the opportunity. Yeah. I'm a coffee producer from Honduras, also an exporter. And yes, I have more than four farms. I have actually seven.
Seven, okay.
Seven different lots, seven different farms. I've been growing coffee since 2012. Before that, my coffee career has been around the exporting business. Because that's our family business that my grandfather started back in the 60s, and that's kind of like the background. So they didn't have any success with farming, neither my grandfather or my father, but I decided to go and explore farming a little bit more.
So are you the first coffee farmer in your family?
No, I'm a third generation coffee farmer, but I'm the one who like took back the practices of growing coffee. Before, my dad would just buy coffee and sell it for the exporting business. That's kind of like how it
Yeah. I see. And so you've also worked on the milling side. So I tend to think of those as different things, you know, like producing coffee or growing coffee, milling coffee, and exporting. Is it all kind of, like for you, is this called kind of one thing or?
For us, it's one thing. For other producers and other people in other places, it's different. So you have many different scenarios depending on the origin. In our case, for example, you can say that it's a vertically integrated operation inland in Honduras. We produce the coffee, we process the coffee, we mill and export.
Okay.
Right. So it's kind of like a combination of everything. And we mill and process our own coffees, but also we provide the service for many producers, actually hundreds of producers that process their coffees with us in our dry mill.
And so can you talk to me a little bit about what was it like to grow up around coffee? For you as like a kid, what was it like?
Yeah, I was there, you know, like the whole time. I think I started officially going to support my dad and my siblings in the operation when I was 8, 9. I was the person who would take lunch.
Okay, yeah.
From home to deliver to my brother and my dad, and I would stay there in the afternoon just like helping pick up bags, you know, like rack the coffee in the patio, okay. You know, like do small activities. And then as I grew up, I started to get more and more and more involved with, you know, like all different activities. It wasn't like a full-time job because I was there just on the weekends and on vacations. Okay. Right, but all of a sudden, you know, like I was a teenager and I graduated from college and I had something to do, and I was like, well, I guess I'm just gonna go straight to work at the company as a full-time job. And it was really interesting to see, you know, like how coffee business was before and how, you know, it is now. And it's just interesting to see how much it has evolved, not only in terms of quality, not only in terms of connectivity, but also in terms of us as a family, how we were able to grow, how, you know, like everything transformed within this period of time that we've been operating, which is not short. Like my dad actually started officially the company in 1979. So it's been 40 plus years of work, you know, like, and basically, you know, like I was born in it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been a while too. And a lot of price shifts too, depending on conventional or specialty. Can you give us like a picture of maybe, did you feel impacted by price changes over the years? You've been in specialty.
100%. I mean, whatever you consider a specialty, right? Because the specialty coffee is quite a wide range. But if we want to go like lower specialty, which is I would call like the commercial conventional, okay. This is what we did for, you know, like many, many years, right? Okay. We didn't differentiate any type of quality or anything. Everything will get like all blended together, okay. And we will like sell the coffee as just one specific type. Right, we didn't have any separation, any diversification. Okay. And then a specialty coffee comes. And when I talk about a specialty coffee, I would always talk about Cup of Excellence and the impact that Cup of Excellence brought to Honduras. Yeah. And because of the competition, we were able to get exposure. We got to be known because we participated in the competition without really knowing what we had in terms of quality. And then Cup of Excellence, through it, we discovered that there was high quality in our region, and the producers we were working with had great quality. So we started to develop that, and it was a game changer because it wasn't just the economic impact of, you know, like selling the coffee in a platform that, you know, like you can get super high prices, or, you know, like having access to a market that can, you know, like provide you higher FOB prices. It's also the recognition and the pride that we were able to get from an industry that was just another normal product in the country, right? And that was a game changer because it inspired a lot of producers to do better, inspire culture to get richer, okay. And bigger, and motivated people like me to get involved more and support not only our region, not only our producers, but also the whole country as like a whole. And it's been really good because Honduras has an important position in specialty coffee now, and we're very proud that we're part of it.
I have a question for you, just like trying to picture it for myself. Before and after Cup of Excellence, what would you say? What was it like before and after, like just snapshot?
So before, we had no idea that there was a market out here that would like care, okay. First of all.
So you thought people just drink coffee, whatever?
Yeah, we just people that whatever. We just got whatever, you know, like, okay. And no, you know, like there was a lot more than that. And after the Cup of Excellence, we started to connect with market. We started to meet people from this side of the chain. And then these people were interested not only in the coffee, but they were also interested in us as people.
Okay.
Right. And they wanted to invest in what we were doing. They wanted to see us grow. They wanted to see us succeed. And that was, you know, like the most different thing. And then all these people, all these foreigners, all, you know, like humans that had zero connections with us, just all of a sudden became very close friends and very important people that would help set the basis of our business. And yeah, they brought us here. You know, like market brought us here. They have us here. They invested and trusted in what we were doing. And yeah, I think that's the biggest change, you know, like being able to like connect with this market and be part of it and build important, solid relationships with them.
I feel like you're like reading I don't know if you read some of the questions I sent you, but my next thing is relationships and coffee. Like you talked about, you're doing business, right? Yeah. For you, but for you even, it's like a family business. Is it fair to say it's more personal because of that?
Yeah.
And so doing business with coffee is very relational, would you say, for you?
Yeah, it's very important. You know, like it's my life, you know, like, and it's the life of many others. And you know, like I was born in it. I've been, you know, like working in it my whole life and see people that are, you know, like engineers, teachers, accountants, you know, like tech people that drop their jobs because they fell in love in coffee and they are doing coffee now and see how much they care for me is really valuable because even though they were not born in it, they care as the same or more than what we do. Yeah. And for me, you know, like bonding and connecting with these people has been really important. Yeah. And yeah, you know, like you want to work also with your friends. You want to work with the people you like. You want to work with the people that believe in you and they want you to be better. And that's, you know, like the base of our model, you know, like just, you know, like support each other, work with your friends. Of course, not everything is going to be great. There's always, you know, like ups and downs, but we try to support each other and see for the long term because, you know, like coffee is a long term business. And I think, you know, like relationships are like the most important part of it. Yes, you can definitely turn it into something transactional, sell and go. But I think it loses its soul. And coffee is a product that is very noble, is very humble, and it has a lot of that, a lot of soul. Because it's related to like working hard, working your land, working your patrimony, hospitality, a combination of many different things that there's a lot of human interaction. And that has a lot to do with, you know, like the health of the connections. And if normally a healthy connection is based on friendships and relationships. And I think, you know, like that's for me, you know, like the base of what we do.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a thread I'm seeing with supply chains that produce really phenomenal coffee. What I'm seeing, at least from the conversations I've had so far, like in your supply chain with Metric, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of be authentic, be relational, care about each other's people beyond just business. Yeah. And it shines through the cup, you know, like
100%.
It does come all the way down and through the
100%.
Cup.
Because there's something, Jesse, we make the coffee.
Yeah.
Like depending on how you treat it from the plant, you're going to have an impact in the taste. Right. And all that gets all the way here because you as a roaster, you as a barista, you are somehow, you know, like touching and manipulating the product and creating it and making it, you know, like taste better. Yeah. We do one part, you do the rest. We make it as people. And I think, you know, like we need to work together as, you know, like people, as a community, as friends. And there's nothing more beautiful than that.
Yeah. So relationships are messy too, right? So they have hard things happen.
Of course, you know, like we're humans and we're not perfect. And as I said, you know, like we make the coffee. Yeah, we can also, you know, like mess the coffee up, you know? It happens. But that's normal. That's how nature is.
You know? Like,
And we're very far from perfection, but we try, you know, like to be as close as we can.
Let me ask you this question. Producers are seen as the beginning of the coffee supply chain, like the most upstream. I guess it depends on who you ask, but do you agree or disagree with that?
I would agree. Well, depends, because there can be the influence of market influencing producers, right?
Yeah.
So kind of like
I see
everything.
Yeah, there's a big, everything touches kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if we talk about the people, though, the like relational element. So as a producer, I mean, you work with pickers, right? None of your coffee, none of the coffee is automatically harvested, right? So there's pickers and all kinds of, like you said, when you were a kid, like bring a food to the workers. Like I'm picturing the whole thing there. For you as a from the producer perspective, what are some of the most important characteristics you're looking for in a buyer? Like somebody who's going to buy your coffee or even export your coffee?
I think respect, kindness, care, humility. You know, like I think those are the things, you know, like you know, like people that are trying to be nice and people that are also reliable, trustable. I think that's it. Very basic. And I think it's all based on respect. And I think if you respect things, you know, like are just going to be, you know. Like,
Yeah. Have you seen, I'm just thinking through conversations I've had in the past. I know that you kind of like because of your family business, there's the coffee growing side, there's the exporting side, and there's the milling side.
Yeah.
Can you speak to maybe not your specific supply chain, but the challenge is, like, I've heard producers say, like, when they go to finally, like, mill their coffee or something, like, bad things can happen to their coffee, right? What are some challenges that you see as a producer that if you were in a different environment, you would be kind of nervous about, you know, because you kind of have a hand in importing, exporting, et cetera?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I would honestly, you know, like, consider myself a privileged producer, right? Because, you know, like, I have a job in an exporting company. And I also am a partner in a roasting company in Honduras. I also have a partnership in a coffee shop. I also was able to go and get a university degree, right? And if one of the things fail, I have the other one. And if all fail, You know, like if the coffee farming fails, if the exporting business fails, if my cafe goes bankrupt, you know, I still have a, you know, like a university title that I can go and apply for a job somewhere, right? And that's not the option of other producers, right? But that doesn't mean we don't really have any challenges. But there's definitely a wide range of challenges that has a big impact in many producers, especially right now in Honduras. A big problem we have is labor, because of the conditions in Honduras that hasn't been very good. A lot of people decided to migrate, and they are here stateside trying to like work and make a living in order to maintain their families over there.
That affected harvest,
and
mostly.
Yes, because you know, like Honduras as a country, you know, like the coffee is one of the biggest industries there, and we're a 9 million people country, and out of those 9 million, over 1 million works in coffee during harvest. And what has happened between 2020 and now is that many of these people has migrated here. I mean, just the numbers are crazy. It's like over the 15% of the population has left the country. And that has had a lot of impact in the coffee. So we're not able to grow more than what we have. We're not able to, you know, like harvest 100% of the coffee. This is going to make a dramatic change in the production when it's going to drop. And we hardly see that things are going to change, unfortunately. There's also, you know, like the minor, but always, you know, like annoying challenges with, you know, like the economics, with the financing that is always complicated, with not knowing how to process, with the accessibility to market, with the promotion opportunities, all the things that are also barriers, you know. Also the climate that has been also a very marked and unstable thing, you know, like with, you know, like getting rain when we're not supposed to get rain, getting high temperatures when we're not supposed to get high temperatures. All of this is affecting the way we grow coffee and the way we produce it. So there's many different challenges, and all combined, I think, have the whole industry struggling. Of course, there's going to be a group of producers that are doing better. There's going to be an established group of people that are thriving and succeeding, but it's not the case for everyone, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is worldwide. It's not just in Honduras.
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of really important things, like things that producers are concerned about, like, you know, the price they're getting for their coffee. That's a conversation maybe for another time. I feel like talking to you about price because you've been around so much and you understand like the point of export and as a producer, like all the cost of labor and everything else. But that's for a different time. We could open up that can. Yeah, but for now, let's talk about the story of the producer. So your story or the story of producers you work with, how important is it that story is communicated to the end consumer, like all the way down the chain? What's your opinion of that? And
I think it's important because, you know, like we are investing so much, so many resources in coffee, and sometimes we don't really know all of the information, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, like a lot of the value that coffee has outside of the cup is related to where the coffee comes from, who produces it, and all the traceability details on it. I think it's one of the most important things. And also for us as producers, it's also just that really, you know, like happy moment when we see, you know, like our names in a bag and, you know, like our pictures in social media. That's kind of like, you know, like, our baby trophy, you know, like,
we
won,
yeah.
You know, like we made it. You know, it's an important recognition. And I think, you know, for the consumers, you know, like it's cool to see, you know, like what you're buying, you know, like, it's cool to understand, you know, like what you're paying. Or, you know, what are you putting in your body also, you know, like you're drinking it. So it's important, you know, like I think, and adds a lot of value to that. Because, you know, not everyone has the ability to or the capacity to go to Origin and, you know, like spend time with us and do that. So, you know, like getting the information is always important because it's a complement of the quality of the coffee.
Do you think, is there a place for delivering in coffee without a story, like with specialty specifically? Like, is there a place to sell coffee and never tell the story? Or do you think the story should be central? As a central part of the story of the coffee from...
Yeah, I think it is. Of course, you know, like not all the models are going to be able to provide, you know, like all of the information, right?
Right, right.
There are certain coffees that it's really hard to track and everything. So I think, you know, like you can just apply whatever case to whatever, you know, like product, right? I think it's just very different. But for a specialty and for like what we're doing as an industry and like the higher tier of a specialty, yeah, I think it has to be there.
Okay. And... is there a wrong way to share a story of a producer?
100%.
Okay, give me an example. Or 100%. Like if you have like a real example.
100%. I don't know. You know, like I don't want to say anything. But yeah, you know, like there's always, you know, like miscommunication. And that normally happens. And there's, you know, like a lot of coffee. And there's a lot of people touching the coffee. You
right,
know, like,
right.
And,
whose name do you put on it?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, like it's easy. You know, like, and it's not bad. You know, like it's, as I said before, you know, we're humans, we're not perfect. And I think it's a responsibility from us producers to provide data, to provide information.
Okay.
And also, it's important for people to get a little bit more involved and understand more, you know, like what's going on and try to translate. There's also a detail. Not everyone is interested in listening. Not everyone is interested in consuming information, right? So, you know, like, well, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, like, we provide to whoever requests it.
Yeah, I could picture like an extreme example. I've never seen anybody do this, but you know, like at the end of a movie, there's the credit screen roll.
Yeah, no one reads that.
Like, yeah, nobody reads that.
I do.
Sometimes. You do? But it's like, you know, you produce a coffee and so-and-so picked the, you know.
That's what market dictates. Like, for example, I've been behind the bar in cafes stateside.
Nice.
Sometimes, you know, like there's my coffee and the menu and I'm like super proud presenting it. And I'm like, hey, this is actually my coffee. And people show a lot of interest. Yeah. But some other people that are in a rush.
I don't care.
They're going to work. Hey, you know, actually, I just need my coffee because I need to leave. And you know, like, we have to understand that. And we have to adapt to that.
Okay.
You know, like, as long as they're, you just need to make sure that they are happy and satisfied, even though they are not looking for the information. Right.
That's a really interesting perspective.
That's how it is.
You were a barista and producer of the coffee you were serving.
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't need the story.
Yeah, just give me my coffee.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is fine. I respect that. You know?
Yeah. They're like, I'm busy.
I have a meeting.
I have a meeting in like.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I like that we talked about there's a wrong way to share a story because a lot of roasters I think are tempted to jump into greenwashing, don't realize they're greenwashing, or in this case it's more like just washing. I don't know what you call this, exposure washing. I don't know, but it's like, if I put your name on a bag just because, you know, I don't know, because you were involved somehow with the coffee, like there could be weird ways to communicate coffee,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's kind of what I was getting at and the intentionality that you talk about.
But I think, you know, like when you provide the information, it shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
And I think if the market of the buyer or the roaster has the information with mistakes and everything, you know, like, I think, you know, like we have now the ability to, you know, like reach out and say like, hey, what you posted is wrong.
Yeah.
The information is not correct, you
nice.
Know, like in that regard.
Nice.
And others, you know, like I would say, you know, like, I mean, not all the producers have the technology to do it, but I think it's a way to do it. And just make sure, you know, like you provide the right information and just make sure that the information gets to the place where you want it.
Okay. Yeah. I like the idea that the producer is providing the information. Okay. Let's kind of jump into a different topic here. Like I mentioned before, you mentioned actually as well, the experience with conventional and specialty. You said that specialty has a wide range and the lower end you would call conventional. I think I'm messing up in my head the definition. So is there something lower quality than conventional that I'm missing or?
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Okay.
All, you know, like,
what do we refer to that as? Because I've been getting that kind of messed up in my head.
I don't know. I refer like rejects most of the time. Like there's, you know, like the top quality, we have the lower quality. And you have, you know, like all the category of, you know, like where the robustas are and where all the coffees that are taken from the conventional are, which is, you know, like all of the physical defects and all that.
Right.
That also are sub-products of coffee.
So you still sell all?
You'll still sell it. And you have different grades and different types of coffees. So, yeah, there's a very wide range.
So no coffee goes unsold is kind of what you're saying.
Oh, no. No. There's a place. There's a home for everything. Even for the shipped, broken ones, the tiny ones that are sorted, those are like, if, for example, in my town, those are sold, you know, like in retail bags for people that want to buy, you know, like cheap coffee.
Really cheap,
it has a market. It has a place. Nothing goes to waste.
Do you know, in specialty, it's kind of like we only ever talk about specialty coffee.
Yeah.
And then we sometimes mention conventional, but we never really talk about the rest. The Jesus mission, kind of the lowest tier there. And everything has a market. And I think that's a very savvy business approach or thinking.
Yeah, that's coffee that comes from producers that deserve the same attention and the same respect as others. You know, like it's just not, you know, like in the cup. But outside of the cup, there's so much value. There's so many stories, you know, but unfortunately it doesn't get out there because there's no quality there. So, which is sad, but at the same time, you know, like producers got used to, you know, like not being recognized because of the quality of the coffee. Because of the price, because of the quality, because of many different variables. So, you know, it is what it is, you know, like there's very little we can do to, you know, like to make, you know, like taste, you know, like those coffees better. And there's also, you know, like very few ways to really add value outside of the cup. This is not how the market works, unfortunately.
Yeah.
For those like super low quality coffees.
So if there's a producer that was producing really low quality coffee, would you convince them to start like increasing their quality and their processes if they could? And what would be your argument for it?
If it makes sense in the growing conditions, yes. Okay. If not, it would be a waste of time and energy.
Okay, can you give me an example? Yeah, that's alien.
For example, if you have, you know, like producer that grows at 400 meters.
Okay, so low
very
elevation.
Low altitude that has no other chances of growing decent quality without using, you know, like hybrids, so, you know, like super high resistant varieties that not necessarily
taste like
good.
Or like Robusta could even
Robusta, yeah, okay. Right. And if the conditions are just not the right scenario to produce a specialty coffee, you just don't push it, you know, like it doesn't make sense. And it wouldn't be sustainable for them to do it. Unfortunately, they have to land in that, you know, like level of quality and just...
renovating a farm is not cheap either, right?
No, it's not. And yes, you know, like there might be someone who can, you know, like give a space and say, you know, like, hey, I might use your coffee for this purpose or something like that, and I can pay a little more and you can start developing something more. Yes, there's that chance. But it's very little. It's very little.
So it's hard to switch.
It's really hard to switch. But if you have the potential, if you can identify, you know, like an area where they can grow better coffee, if they can, you know, like change in the infrastructure to adapt to something new or create a different product that make their quality better, 100%. 100%. And you can identify those things, you know, like with altitude, with soil quality, with shade, with growing conditions, with variety, et cetera, you can definitely achieve.
So an agronomist or somebody who knows land and growing conditions could really help with that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I said agronomist, and I feel like you didn't like that word.
No.
Okay, I do.
I mean, like they are the ones that know it. You know, like our team, all of them are agronomists, basically.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, you know, it's the most important thing. You know, you need to understand how plants are grown.
Yeah, I know some producers have a rough time with agronomists because of the history of like, oh hey, you know, grow it this way and then grow it that way. And we've had some of those conversations.
Yeah, it's difficult, you know, like, because no one is really the owner of the truth, and no one really knows better the farms than the producers. But sometimes, you know, like we need a guidance. Sometimes we need to open our mind and our eyes a little bit more in order to, you know, like listen to advices and do investments. And it's not easy. It's always difficult to, you know, like change completely on something, but I would say it's worth it. And I think, you know, like it's not hard to identify where there's potential and where there's not.
Okay. Last question for you. You can choose one of the three, okay? And this is the end of the interview. First question is, what's the most important piece of advice you've ever received? The second question, well, you can choose which one you want.
I'll like probably stay with that one.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
And then you can, after I respond, you can tell me the other ones.
Okay.
Be friends first and then do business.
Ah, okay. Ooh, I like that. Because then, yeah, you build trust early.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
You said many bases. And then you can do coffee. And then you can do business.
Do business, yeah, because that applies beyond coffee. That's great.
That's probably the best one.
What
are the other two?
The other one is, what is the main takeaway? So our listeners, they listen all over the world. What is the main thing you want them to remember from our conversation? So if they forgot everything we talked about, they only remember one thing, what do you want it to be?
We're people like them. We're trying to like achieve our goals, accomplish our dreams, make a living out of it. Don't forget that, we're humans.
Nice. Well, the trifecta, let's do the third question. Is there anything you've unlearned recently? This is the idea that you held a belief and something changed your mind and it impacted your life.
Whew. I don't know. That's a hard question. I don't know. I probably need more than 30 minutes to think about
it. Yeah, that's not fair.
There's been a lot happening in my life recently.
Okay.
And I don't know. Yeah, I'll have to like analyze that.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You don't have to answer the question. That's the freedom we have. But hey, thank you for joining us.
No, thank you.
You added so much value to this conversation. So thank you.
No, thank you for the space and the opportunity.
In our next episode, the story of specialty coffee, the exporter. I want to thank Ryan Ingerson for his hard work on the research and video work for these episodes. As always, and until next time, happy brewing.